And we're going to go chapter 13, 14, and 15. They're relatively short chapters, so it's not an awful lot of discussion today, that I think.
The Lord said to Moshe, "Consecrate to me all the firstborn, whatever is the first to open the womb among the people of Israel, both of man and of beast, is mine." Then Moshe said to the people, "Remember this day in which you came out from Mitzrayim, out of the house of slavery, for by a strong hand the Lord brought you out from this place. No leavened bread shall be eaten. Today, in the month of Abib, you are going out. And when the Lord brings you into the land of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, which he swore to your fathers to give you, a land flowing with milk and honey, you shall keep this service in this month. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh day there shall be a feast to the Lord. Unleavened bread shall be eaten for 7 days. No leavened bread shall be seen with you, and no leaven shall be seen with you in all your territory. You shall tell your son on this day, 'It is because of what the Lord did for me when I came out of Mitzrayim.' And it shall be to you as a sign on your hand and as a memorial between your eyes, that the law of the Lord may be in your mouth. For with a strong hand the Lord has brought you out of Mitzrayim. You shall therefore keep this statute at its appointed time from year to year. When the Lord brings you into the land of the Canaanites, as he swore to you and your fathers, and shall give it to you, you shall set apart to the Lord all that the first that first opens the womb. All the firstborn of your animals that are males shall be the Lord's. Every firstborn of a donkey you shall redeem with a lamb. For if you will not redeem it, you shall break its neck. Every firstborn of man among your sons you shall redeem. And when in time to come your son asks you, 'What does this mean?' you shall say to him, 'By a strong hand the Lord brought us out of Mitzrayim from the house of slavery.' For when Pharaoh stubbornly refused to let us go, the Lord killed all the firstborn in the land of Mitzrayim, both the firstborn of man and the firstborn of animals. Therefore I sacrifice to the Lord all the males that first opened the womb, but all the firstborn of my sons I redeem. It shall be as a mark on your hand or frontless between your eyes, or for by a strong hand the Lord brought us out of Mitzrayim. When Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them by the way of the Philistines, although that was near. For God said, 'Lest the people change their minds when they see war and return to Mitzrayim.' But God led the people around by the way of the wilderness toward the Red Sea. And the people of Israel went up out of the land of Mitzrayim equipped for battle. Moshe took the bones of Yosef with him, for Yosef had made the sons of Israel solemnly swear, saying, 'God will surely visit you, and you shall carry me up my bones with you from here.' And they moved on from Sukkot and camped at Etam, and on the which is on the edge of the wilderness. And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead them along the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, that they might travel by day and by night. The pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night did not depart from before the people. Then the Lord said to Moshe, 'Tell the people of Israel to turn back and encamp in front of Pi-Hahirot, between Migdol and the sea, in front of Baal Sephon. You shall encamp facing it by the sea. For Pharaoh will say to the people of Israel, "They are wandering in the land, and the wilderness has shut them in. And I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will pursue them, and I will get glory over Pharaoh and all his hosts. And the people of Mitzrayim shall know that I am the Lord." And they did so. When the king of Mitzrayim was told that the people had fled, the mind of Pharaoh and his servants was changed toward the people, and they said, "What is this we have done, that we have let Israel go from serving us?" So he made ready his chariot and took his army with him. He took 600 chosen chariots and all the other chariots of Mitzrayim with officers over all of them, And the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Mitzrayim, and he pursued the people of Israel while the people of Israel were going out defiantly. The people of Mitzrayim pursued them, all Pharaoh's horses and chariots, and his horsemen and his army, and overtook them and camped by the sea, by Pi Hahirot, in front of Baal Zephon. When Pharaoh drew near, the people of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the people of Mitzrayim were marching after them, and they feared greatly. And the people of Israel cried out to the Lord. They said to Moshe, "Is it because there are no graves in Mitzrayim that you have taken us away to die in the wilderness? What have you done to us in bringing us out of Mitzrayim? Is this not what we said to you in Egypt? Let us live alone, that we may serve the people of Mitzrayim. For it would have been better for us to serve the people of Mitzrayim than to die in the wilderness." And Moshe said to the people, "Fear not, stand firm and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will work for you today. For the people of Mitzrayim whom you see today, you shall never see them again. The Lord will fight for you, and you have only to be silent." The Lord said to Moshe, "Why do you cry to me? Tell the people of Israel to go forward. Lift up your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it, that the people of Israel may go through the sea on dry ground. And I will harden the hearts of the people of Mitzrayim so that they shall go in after them. And I will get glory over Pharaoh and all his host, his chariots and his horsemen. And the people of Mitzrayim shall know that I am the Lord when I have gotten glory over Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen." Then the angel of God, who was going before the host of Israel, moved and went behind them, and the pillar of cloud moved from before them and stood behind them, coming between the host of Mitzrayim and the host of Israel. And there was the cloud in the darkness, and it lit up the night without one coming near the other all night. Then Moshe stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord drove the sea back by a strong east wind all night and made the sea dry land, and the waters were divided. The people of Israel went into the midst of the sea on dry ground, the waters being a wall to them on their right hand and on their left. And the people of Mitzrayim pursued and went in after them into the midst of the sea, all Pharaoh's horses, his chariots, and his horsemen. And in the morning watch, the Lord in a pillar of fire and of cloud looked down on the Egyptian forces and threw them into a panic, clogging their chariot wheels so that they drove heavily. And the people of Mitzrayim said, "Let us flee from before the Lord, for the Lord fights for them against the people of Mitzrayim." Then the Lord said to Moshe, "Stretch out your hand over the sea, that the water may come back upon the people of Mitzrayim, upon their chariots, and upon their horsemen." So Moshe stretched out his hand over the sea, and the sea returned to its normal course when the morning appeared. And as the people of Mitzrayim fled into it, the Lord threw them into the midst of the sea. The waters returned and covered the chariots and the horsemen, and all the host of Pharaoh that had followed them into the sea. Not one of them remained. But the people of Israel walked on dry ground through the sea, the waters being a wall to them on their right hand and on their left. Thus the Lord saved Israel that day from the hand of the people of Mitzrayim, and Israel saw the people of Mitzrayim dead on the seashore. Israel saw the great power of the Lord against the people of Mitzrayim, so the people feared the Lord, and they believed in the Lord and his servant Moshe. Then Moshe and the people of Israel sang this song to the Lord, saying, "I will sing to the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously. The horse and his rider he has thrown into the sea. The Lord is my strength, and the Lord is my song, and he has become my salvation. This is my God, and I will praise him, my father's God, and I will exalt him. The Lord is a man of war. The Lord is his name. Pharaoh's chariots and his host he has cast into the sea, and his chosen officers were sunk in the Red Sea. The floods covered them. They went down into the depths like a stone. Your right hand, O Lord, glorious in power. Your right hand, O Lord, shatters the enemy. In the greatness of your majesty, you overthrow your adversaries. You send out your fury. It consumes them like stubble. At the blast of your nostrils, the waters piled up. The floods stood up in a heap. The deeps congealed in the heart of the sea. The enemy said, I will pursue. I will overtake. I will divide my spoil. My desire shall have its fill of them. I will draw my sword. My hand shall destroy them. You blew with your wind, the sea covered them. They sank like lead in the mighty waters. Who is like you, O Lord, among the gods? Who is like you, majestic in holiness, awesome in glorious deeds, doing wonders? You stretched out your right hand, the earth swallowed them. You have led in your steadfast love the people whom you have redeemed. You have guided them by your strength to your holy abode. The peoples have heard, they tremble. Pangs have seized the inhabitants of Philistia. Now are the chiefs of Edom dismayed. Trembling seizes the leaders of Moab. All the inhabitants of Canaan have melted away. Terror and dread fall on them. Because of the greatness of your arm, still they are still like as a stone. Till your people, O Lord, pass by, till the people pass by whom you have purchased. You will bring them in and plant them on their own mountain, the place, O Lord, which you have made for your abode, the sanctuary, O Lord, which your hands have established. The Lord will reign forever and ever. For when the horses of Pharaoh and his chariots and his horsemen went into the sea, the Lord brought back the waters of the sea upon them. But the people of Israel walked on dry ground in the midst of the sea. Then Miriam, the prophetess, the sister of Aharon, took a tambourine in her hand, and all the women went out after her with tambourines and dancing. And Miriam sang to them, Sing to the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously. The horse and his rider he has thrown into the sea. Then Moshe made Israel set out from the Red Sea, and they went into the wilderness of Shur. They went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. When they came to Marah, they could not drink the water of Marah because it was bitter. Therefore, it was named Marah. And the people grumbled against Moshe, saying, What shall we drink? And he cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a log, and he threw it in the water, and the water became sweet. There the Lord made for them a statute and a rule, and there he tested them, saying, If you will diligently listen to the voice of the Lord your God, and do that which is right in his eyes, and give ear to his commandments, and keep all his statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you that I put on the people of Mitzrayim, for I am the Lord, your healer. Then they came to Elim, where there were 12 springs of water and 70 palm trees, and they camped there by the water.
There's an awful lot of information in this particular section. But I've already done this and researched it tremendously. When we come to the days of unleavened bread, I'll go and, no, not days of unleavened bread, the days of Shavuot, which is in great detail. We're going to go back and look at all the names and find out, because this is a beginning of the period of time when there's so many weeks before they reach Mount Sinai, and a specific number of weeks. So we're looking at, in a sense, the first week, or what's called the days of unleavened bread. All right? So we'll talk about that more in detail and preciseness when we approach that particular time. But until then, do you have any questions?
How did the people that lived around them, or, you know, by them, how did they know? Did they see, or who told them that the Lord made the Egyptians,
that he killed them?
So how did they know?
How did the Egyptians
did
know that?
They had emails or something that they sent to them?
I'm sorry, what?
The reporters were there.
Reporters were there, yes. Now, that's a mysterious question. I know that. The only conclusion I could come up with, tell you the honest truth, is that this was revealed to Moses after the event and not during. That's what they yelled out. I mean, you know, God's a good witness, right? So imagine he turned, told Moses what they did and what they said. You know, the fascinating thing of taking off the wheels. Putting mud packs on them. That's pretty cool. He had his angels working pretty good. Yes?
Some historians also, in laying out the years, this destroyed Egypt. Egypt was never a big power after that. The queen married a Hittite, and the Egyptian society that had been huge was erased, never came back.
No, they never raised up into a world power ever again. They became wealthy, but never raised up to the power they once were. Because during Solomon's time, Egypt was very prosperous in that sense. But it wasn't under the Pharaoh that we know of. This particular Pharaoh, in time and history, they've never found his gravesite. All the other kings they found, but this one there, they have not found this one's gravesite. Quite interesting. Coincidental, of course, right? Anyway, yes.
They found old Egyptian wheels. I don't know if it's from Moses' time, but they were inlaid with gold.
And
the gold is what lasted.
Yeah. We'll go into more detail that later on. I've got even, not photographs, I got some pictures that we might want to show on the screen in the future of the events that took place and how they actually journeyed. Yes.
Some years ago, there was archaeological finds in the Red Sea somewhere in Sinai with old chariot,
yes.
Iron
chariots. No, not iron, the gold.
They found
the gold.
Okay. The second question, though, has to do with the donkey, and I forget why the donkey is picked out of all the animals. Yeah. And
this is done during a man's name, Ron Wyatt, back in the 60s or 50s, 70s. And he won, and he's the first one who out and found those exact chariot wheels that were gold plated, and a certain number of spokes that are on the wheel. Yeah. And the other ones were not, had different number, but this particular one was at that particular point in time in history where this particular Pharaoh, his chariots that the gold had the golden, plated on it were his greatest horsemen or chariots killers. Yes. Oh. But we'll go into that much later, because it's going to be a long time for me to go through that, and it's such a short period. This, I'm just giving you an introduction of where we're heading pretty soon, because the whole object here is heading toward the Ten Commandments. And a certain number of days, certain number of weeks, certain period of time, that it took from a given point in time, and not where we think it may be, but a given point in time. We'll talk about that more in detail. A lot of theories, a lot of ideas, a lot of concepts. I want to say this much, that when we go into this thing more in detail, the exact pattern, this is on a Jewish scholars now, not American scholars, not Richard scholar, but Jewish scholars, have stated exactly what day each one of those points were on the calendar. Okay? We'll go into that more detail as we get closer and closer to the Passover. But what I want to talk about here today is that we read these things, and obviously somebody later added information into the book of Exodus many years later. More than likely, they give that credit to Ezra. That is the assembly of Ezra. Ezra had the Sanhedrin with him, and he was the head Sanhedrin guy, as you might say. Yes.
So somebody added to the Exodus?
Yeah. It's quite common. Because already talk about past history, not present tense. It's always talk about past history. I mean, like in Genesis itself, how could Abraham conquer and defeat all the way up to Dan when Dan didn't exist? All right? Okay. This is, it doesn't mean that someone cheated. No, it's the documentation which Ezra was commanded by a certain king, very important king, to document and put together everything about the history of your people. And so Ezra and the men of 120, I think it was 120, called the men of the great assembly, and during Ezra's time, and they correlated and put together all the writings they had. Now, at a point in time, they had to change the names of certain places that didn't have that name at that point in time. Now, the names have changed, and now, so they brought up the name at that point in time, in Ezra's time, what was called. All right? Names do change.
Didn't they give you the old name, too, so that you would know?
I'm sorry, what?
When they put the up-to-date name, did they still keep the other name? So,
I cannot say that because I wasn't there. I do not know. I'll be honest with you. I do not know. Ezra is noted as he was like the second Moses. That is, he's the one that documented everything down. Not he, but the men of the 120. It was not a one-man show. It was 120 men. It's all listed, I think, in the book of Ezra or in the book of Nehemiah. Right up here. I can't remember the names of all those 120 that are listed there, but they were commanded to do so by a certain king. Now, so let's go back to Exodus 13. And there's some interesting statements which we probably need to talk about here for a moment. The verse 1. Now, what day was this? I'll clarify my statement. What was the date of the month? Not the day, but the date of the month that this occurred. Remember, they left Ramses. And now they're at a place called Sukkot, or Sukkah. This is daytime now, on the 15th day of the first month. And so the very first thing that God ordered to be done, on the first day of the 15th day of the days of unleavened bread, because the days of unleavened bread now, not Passover. Days of Passover is finished. Time of Passover, they had to eat it at night and destroy it, burn it up before morning. So there's no more Passover. It ended. Now these are days called days of unleavened bread. And it's very important. The Bible talks about days of unleavened bread over and over and over again. That's a very, very important series or very important set of 7 days. It talks more about them than does Passover. So we have to get our focus in. So on this very first day, day of unleavened bread, we'll talk about what that means when the days of unleavened bread approach us. I'm not going to get in advance at that point in time right now. A lot of you already know it, but that's not object here for today. The object here for today is what did he command? Why? Yeah, why would he want the firstborn males dedicated to him for? What's the purpose? I'm sorry, what? First fruits. Okay, we can call it. Yeah, okay, okay. We'll push you for that for right now. Yes.
It's like the 8th day.
Okay. You can kind of put it that way. I never thought about that, but that's okay.
What about because Yeshua is a firstborn?
Okay. But why all of them? We find out, we'll get this answer. Your answer is going to be found in the book of Numbers. I'm not going to clarify that point in time. We're not in the book of Numbers yet. But pay attention to why it's here now. Why he's saying it now. Both animals and men. Not, yes.
Because he killed all the firstborn in Egypt.
Because he killed
and this is to remind them of what they went through.
That's what they just came out of. Remember the death? the last one, and someone says, why wasn't there more? Because they're dead. Why go any farther? And we keep on reading here. It says, make sure you tell your children, this is what I did. So the object of this pattern is really up front. It's telling us the reason why I want you to take your firstborn, and they belong to me as the firstborn of Egypt belong to me, as the firstborn of the animals belong to me, and I killed them. I'm giving you a picture here. Now, it's very serious. You think, well, that's pretty heavy stuff, right? If you were there, what would you think? Huh? What? And so that day, the 15th day, I don't know how long it took, but those days, people didn't have to have a birth certificate to say when you were born, whether you're the first one or second one or third one. Everybody knew who was the firstborn. They didn't have to have a county clerk writing a piece of paper out, or a city clerk proving you were the firstborn male. No. They just knew. So it didn't take like forever. Everybody kind of knew who they were. You know, it's like, it was really evidence that my brother was the firstborn. I mean, who's going to argue against that one? Now, yes.
Silly question. In Israel, do they still do the break the neck of a donkey?
We'll get that the next step we're leading up to.
Okay.
It's not explained in detail here, but it is in truth. All right? This is where I wanted to go here. Because now he's saying something very specific. Okay. When Yahshua brought thee, verse 5, into the land of the Canaanites, the Hittites, and so on and so forth, thou shalt keep this service in this month. What service are they supposed to keep? Passover! No. The 15th day of the first month. What are you supposed to do on the 15th day of the first month? Well, it has to do with what? That it has to do with the lamb? You see the importance of trying to separate the Word of God. We kind of group everything all together in one big, huge package. Now I understand the package. When God goes in extreme detail, explaining specifically what it's all about. You understand what I'm saying so far? So now he says, now when you come out on the 15th, you came out on this on the 15th day of the first month. Now I want you to observe this. What were they supposed to observe? 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and the seventh day you shall be a feast unto the Lord. We'll talk about that much later. Unleavened bread shall be eaten for 7 days. Now, that's weird. Why should matzah be eaten? It makes no sense. Well, because, see, they couldn't make matzah, they couldn't make bread, they couldn't because they couldn't yeast. No, for 7 days. How do you know it was 7 days? Can you prove it was 7 days? How can you find a scripture with 7 days that they didn't eat bread? We'll get there. And it's right here in this chapter, next chapter, explains more in detail that they didn't have time to even stop for a moment. They were on the go. Remember, he said, Moses said, we must make a 3-day journey. Okay. This is day number one. The 15th day is day number one. What was day number two? They were journeying. Day number three, they were journeying. What did they do on day number three? Moses said, we have to stop. And we have to give another sacrifice. During the days of unleavened bread? Weird. We won't go there today, but keep that in mind, because we'll explain that the best that I understand it in the future. The reason why I'm saying this, because I've got it all written down and studied, I didn't want to bring in the big package stuff I've got. I've done so much research in this particular section of Exodus that I almost can't believe I did it. I still learn an awful lot of new things. Every year I look into it more and I say, okay, I missed that point, but I saw it over here too. What happened? Where's the connection? Because you have to go through both Exodus and Numbers to get the whole picture. I have all mine down and it's all documented for me. I have it all. I make some of the copy, but not the whole document. I'll just give an outline. I have an outline called the outline, and I'll give you an outline what it is. But what I wanted to tell you, my research is basically Richard Agee's research. All right, based upon what the Jewish scholars have said of the date of when the 10th day of the first month occurred on. And you could prove it yourself how they came up with that fact in the book of Exodus. But we won't go there today. It's a lot of process. And I'll probably have a deal on screen like I did before how that works. But now we have to say the question was, okay, what is it that we have to do now? You're going to show your son what took place. How do you show your son on the 15th day of the first day of unleavened bread what took place in Egypt? Well, he tells them, it shall be a sign between thy hand and thy memorial between thy eyes. What are we talking about? Are we talking about the whole Torah? We're talking about the book of Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, and all that crammed into a box? What is he driving at? God wants you to remember this day. Why is it so important that God has said, on the 15th day, I want you to remember, and this is what I want you to tell your son. I delivered you out from the hands of the Egyptians, and I delivered you and saved you, and the firstborn is mine, both animal and man. Okay? That's a weird thought, right? Because we have sin. What's going on? And this shall be to keep this ordinance in its season from year to year. Yes?
Prophecy went to Abraham that they were going to go in, but surely they would come out with abundance. And the representation of the animal that Abraham took up, instead of Isaac being sacrificed, a substitute was placed. So is this a connection, this sign remembering that, hey, and this is still according to the promise that I gave to Abraham. This is why you need to remember. This is why it's a
sign. Daniel mentioned something a couple of 3 or 4 Sabbaths ago, is that after a while the people in Israel forgot, so they had to be re-educated what's happening, okay? This is God's method of re-educating them on a generation to generation to generation. However, it was also forgotten too. When you read about the judges, not judges, but the kings, 1st, 2nd Kings, 1st, 2nd, they forgot. They didn't know what it meant. And so it's quite common. Now, at this particular point, he says, I want this to be remembered. What does he want remembered? With a strong hand has Yahuwah brought thee out of Egypt. Now, that's what's supposed to be remembered in our hands and between our eyeballs. Eyeballs, forehead. That God brought them out of the house of Egypt. What is the first commandment of the Ten Commandments? I am Yahuwah who brought you out of the house of bondage. Therefore, you have no other Elohim replacing me because I brought you out of the house of bondage. The very first commandment tells us what to remember. But see, we only remember part of the first commandment. All I remember is, thou shalt have no other God before me. But the statement before it, it tells you why. And so when you look at the Ten Commandments, though it's kind of shortened to a lot of forms, you should add that first part to the very first commandment, because it includes why. And so the reason why is I want you to remember what I did. And the firstborn son, what's he supposed to remember? Okay, Dad, what's the story again? And he's told, and after a while, the son has to say, Dad, I know the story. Dad says, okay, tell me a story. And the kid has to tell back his dad the story. You know, so it always will be there. Now, there could be variations in language and but the overall concept was that I brought you out with a strong, with what kind of hand? A strong one. I didn't bring you out of there by being kind, gentle, understanding, merciful upon the people of Egypt. I even killed their animals. Why kill the animals? We'll have to look at that, don't we? Now, what she's asked you, every first of the ass you shall redeem. This is the only quote, end of quote, unclean animal. When they say the firstborn, I can see God taking the firstborn of both the clean, quote, and unclean, quote, animal. I can see that. I cannot say that's what it did. Cannot say that's what happened. It's not an issue to me. And one can believe, accept, and interpret any which way they want. I'm not going to alter anybody's thinking. But this one about the ass or the donkey. Now, the donkey, you're supposed to do something about it. You're supposed to buy it back. Why the donkey? Why not a horse? Why not an ox? Okay. What's the main number one reason for a donkey is for? Carrying a burden, and most of the time, carrying a human being. Unlike horses, the donkey also can carry a human being. Now, our donkeys here in America have been so high-bred down to nothing, they probably can't even carry their own weight. But I don't know that much about donkeys or a different species of them. There's probably 100 of them, and I don't know much about them. I don't need to know about those things. But he says, you'll buy it back with what? With a lamb. Why not a turtle dove? because he said lamb. Now, of course, this is going to lead us to the New Testament, right? We understand now. And we know that John the Baptist said something. Behold, the Lamb of God that takes away the sins of the world. And he takes away the sins of the world. What happens to the donkey? It lives. It lives. Who's the donkey?
Are we the donkey?
That's a mule. Now, ask yourself an internal question. Before the Messiah took the burden that the donkey did not get killed, but he got killed, what was on your back? The sins of the world was on your back. And if you don't, what are you supposed to do? Kill the donkey. And that's not a good thing, right? Wait a minute, donkey. I don't care about a donkey. Do you care about a donkey? I don't have a donkey. I haven't seen a donkey except
yes,
the zoo.
Really cute.
All right. He says, in the firstborn of every man, every child, you shall redeem. Doesn't say the firstborn of the animals. Just the firstborn of the male human being. Now, that's an awful lot, right? Awful lot of, quote, lambs would have to be redeemed, correct? Of awful lot of lambs, right? If there's, let's say there's 10,000 firstborn. Man, you got to kill 10,000 sheep to keep the goat, keep the donkey alive. Right? Doesn't make sense to our thinking because we don't think that way. We have a really hard time. And it shall be, verse 14, it says, it shall be that when thy son asks of you, and this comes, saying, why this? Why what? Why take a sheep, a lamb, and kill it to save the donkey? Now, it's not just to save. You remember that God called you out of Egypt? There's a second reason he's got here, right? Did you notice two things he listed here? The second one is, tell them by the strength of Yahuwah brought us out of Egypt from the house of bondage. Now that firstborn son is going to say, huh? Do you think he's going to say, huh? I'd say, huh? What are you talking about? Is there some kind of religious thing about this stuff? Doesn't look like it. So here the firstborn, on this particular day, he must do this. And two reasons, that's for a reason. That, but all the firstborn of children, I redeemed. Oh, verse 15, did you get that last part? But all the firstborn of my children, this is the man saying this to his son, I redeem. Why? It's to be a token, a reminder upon my hand and upon the between my eyes, for the strength of the hand of Yahuwah brought us forth out of Egypt. So when he's looking at his firstborn son, what is the firstborn son supposed to think about? The strength of Yahuwah? Okay, what else?
The covenant,
okay. Yeah, why? Why would that be important to the firstborn son? Just because God said so?
They get a bigger inheritance and they have a bigger responsibility.
That comes later in the Torah, not here. What was the kid supposed to remember?
That
the death
of all those
of the firstborn of Egypt. That's what he's supposed to remember. God redeemed you. He redeemed us by killing the firstborn. Now, my son, I'm redeeming you with a lamb because the lamb is what we killed that we may have our life spared. Israel, like a big, huge donkey. All the house of Israel, like a big, huge donkey. God spared the life of Egypt, of the Israels, and each one of them, remember the family is too big, they joined with another one, but they had to kill a lamb. They had to put blood upon the doorpost and the overhead. And for a reason. Now, they didn't understand what was going on. Of course they didn't. Yes.
I don't remember what I read it, but it says God calls Israel donkey.
Called what?
God calls Israel, the house of Israel, he calls him a donkey.
A donkey.
A stubborn donkey.
Now remember, a donkey is a picture of something that's supposed to carry something. All right? Now, what were they supposed to start carrying?
Covenant.
The covenant of what? The one God made with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. Now, we're going to go to Mount Sinai. That's a different covenant, and God specifically says this one is not the one of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. This is the one for you, O house of Israel. Different. A whole lot different. We'll get there when we face that point. When God took them to the Mount of Sinai, and you know the fire and all that, he said, do you agree to keep these Ten Commandments? Oh, yes. Now he said, this is a covenant between me and you, not Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
Okay.
Now backs it up with Apostle Paul. Remember what he said? It was added because of sin and transgression. But the original covenant back at Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, that's binding. They broke this one. It's no longer binding. You can't hold. Once you break a covenant, you can't patch it back up again. It's impossible. How can would you let's put bluntly, okay? Let's say you committed a horrible sin privately. Can you go back and undo that horrible sin? No, it's there forever. And the only way it can ever be removed is when the lamb is killed. Period. Then you're no longer in bondage. No longer on the house of bondage, which is, of course, sin, iniquity, and transgression. Does that make sense to you? Was that something? Doesn't make sense. I hope I made myself clear on that one. Okay. Now go to chapter 14. There's not too much there, and we'll go through that real quickly. Now they had, we'll go through this, I got to do one more thing, however, there was something on the other page. This is the only place ever recorded to ever exist in all the Bible. It didn't ever exist in the 40 years wandering in the wilderness. It didn't exist from the time they crossed the Red Sea up to Mount Sinai. It wasn't there. Okay? This is where it's listed. Verse 20 of 13, and they took their journey from Sukkot and encamped at Etam. We'll talk about what that means later on in the future. The edge of something. Very important. And Yahuwah went before them by day, a pillar and of a cloud, and led them the way, and by night a pillar of fire to give them light, go by go, day and night. He took not away the pillar of cloud by day, nor the pillar of fire by night, before the people. And then the Lord said unto Moses, speak unto the children of Israel that they shall turn and encamp. Now they're going to go on a camping trip. They moved day and night, day and night, day and night, didn't stop moving for the time they began to enter into the wilderness until they reached this place. 14th chapter. Verse 1 and 2. Speak unto the children of Israel that they turn and encamp before Pahahiroth, between Migdol and the sea, over against Baal Shephon. We'll talk about that in the future. Before it, and camp ye by the sea. First time they encamped. Day and night, they kept moving, kept moving, kept moving, kept moving, kept moving. And you say, people don't, they can't survive that. Why can't they? If God is going to deliver them to a certain place. And this is where he took them. By day, by unleavened bread, unleavened bread, unleavened bread, unleavened bread, unleavened bread, unleavened bread, unleavened bread. They didn't have time to say, oh, let's make some bread. They all they had was matzah. That's all they had. Not the matzah you down buy from Safeway store. No, don't get those two things confused. Totally different kind of food. If they had a Safeway store, they probably would have bought it, but they didn't have a Safeway store or whatever store is your favorite store to camp at or buy things from. Even on the Jewish site, you know, they didn't have a computer. Type in, so I want this matzah from you because you're more Jewish than anybody else. You know, no. Yes. From the way facing the wilderness. Now we'll get into where they had to camp at Etam. We'll talk about that when we reach the days of the journey to the Ten Commandments. Because basically, what we're seeing here. Just being delivered out of Egypt, quote, Exodus out of Egypt, isn't the issue. The issue is heading them toward a certain place. Mary didn't want to take them by another route because war would break out. And he didn't want them to face war. They're fleeing for their lives. And I'll tell you, if you were there, I'm not tired. I'm not hungry. Well, that's matzah. You eat your food, and you get going, keep going. And all of a sudden, you know, you're still, now you stop. And where are you at? Very interesting. We'll talk about the migdol and what that means in Hebrew. I'll probably break that out next week to help us understand what these names are, what they refer to. Because it's very, very important. And then, of course, when they got there, guess what? Now they're at this location, okay, by the Red Sea. The next phrase says, what? God is saying to Moses, say this to the children. I want you to camp here between this place and the sea over against a certain mountain. That's what is actually named a mountain. Therefore, it shall be encamped by the sea. Then he turns around to Moses and says, for I will say to the children of Israel, or Pharaoh will say of the children of Israel, they entangled in the land and the wilderness has shut them in. So Moses, Pharaoh had his men following. Now the report's gotten back to them. How? I don't know. As the journey was going across, they probably go. They know where he's going. When you look at the map, it's very clear where they were going. We'll talk about that when I show you the map. But you go in there, it's very clear exactly where they're heading for. Now he says, I'm going to harden Pharaoh's heart. Oh, again? Yes. And the king of Egypt and the people. And it was told the king of Egypt that the people fled. They weren't coming back. Remember Moses said, we need to go take a 3-day journey. Now he didn't tell them, we ain't coming back. That's why it's very important to pay attention to the third day. Pharaoh found out they weren't coming back. God hardened his heart for him to begin to think that way. Now Pharaoh pictures a losing serpent who probably runs his life on an emotional system. And doesn't use too much thinking. My personal opinion. And of course, he went there and we got the story that he drew near and the children of Israel, verse 10, and they were terrified. And Then they cried out. This is a very interesting thing. And the children of Israel cried out unto Yahuwah, actually against Yahuwah. And they said, now all of a sudden talking to Moses. Yes, they are attacking Yahuwah, but they weren't using, they didn't see him. They didn't see Yahuwah at any point in time in their entire existence. All they saw was Moses and Aaron. And now, so he turned and they're saying this to Moses, because no graves in Egypt hast thou, Moses, taken us away to die in the wilderness? Now, before I get any farther, what does wilderness mean?
A time of trial.
It is a time of trial. But it's a time of all alone. You have no other alternative except that God now is in total control of everything in your world. In the particular case, they are controlled by God. Of course, they cried out, wanted to go back to Egypt. Why did you do this? We're supposed to stay. We should have stayed back in Egypt. I mean, remember, they did not know. The house of Israel did not know. And we'll see that as we go on. They did not know they were going to go to Mount Sinai. Who knew they were going to Mount Sinai? Moses. He said, you will bring them back here, and that will be evidence, Moses, that I am doing the job. Moses knew where he was going. Probably because he took that trip before. Well, not exactly over the water. And of course, the water parted. They cried out, and now says, Moses said, the wording is very awkward here in English. It sounded like Moses was, God in verse 15 was mad at Moses or telling Moses, come on now, what's wrong with you? Why are you crying to me? Now, why are you, the house of Israel, crying unto me? Because Moses got to saying, Yahweh shall fight for you, and you shall hold your peace. In other words, shut up. Shut up. And then God said to Moses, it just says the word but. It's obvious. And lift up thy rod. And that's what Moses did. And he saw the strength of Moses. They didn't see the strength of God, because God in there wasn't there. Now we talk about the cloud. We'll talk about the cloud later. We'll talk about those things later. But it's very fascinating that when you look at this thing, and he said, verse 17, and I behold, I will harden. That is, I'm putting my own phrase here. I'll let those Egyptian people think that they could go after the people and not be afraid of the water. Well, there's a reason to it, because of the place where they were to encamp at, and the name of that certain mountain would have assured that the Egyptians were being protected by their Elohim. Therefore, they had the courage and fortitude to go forward after the Israelites. We'll get into that later. We look at like they were dumb and idiot and fools. No, they actually have a lot of Elohims. And God began to kill every one of them. Killed them. He says, I've killed all the Elohims of Israel, of Egypt, including the very last one, which is right here at this particular location. It's the name of the mountain. Why is it named that way? Baal? It basically means the Lord of the North. The Baal Zephon means the Lord of the North.
That was named the Lord of the North?
That's what Baal Zephon means. We just had to figure out, Lord of the North? Who's the Lord of the North? And of course they crossed. And then he saw all the dead people. And verse 31 is, and Israel saw the great work. And it says what Yahuwah did upon the Egyptians. Actually, that's added here because they didn't really see Yahuwah do it. They saw Moses do it. Because Moses was told by God, turn around and cover them up. Now, did they know that Yahuwah was there or Yahuwah was their God? Yes, because Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Yes, Jeff.
So in other words, Egypt got caught by a bald-faced lie.
All right, now let's get into the 15th chapter here real quick. Yes.
It's just interesting that sometimes, at least in my Bible here, it has little references. In Psalms 106, 7 and 8, it says, our father in Egypt did not understand the wonders, and they did not remember the multitude of your mercies, but rebelled by the sea and the Red Sea. Nevertheless, he saved them for his name's sake, that he might make his power known.
That's why Moses said, shut up! Yes, it was rebellion. Yes, it was anger. They were also, quote, it looks like they were so dumb, or they knew who was doing it all, and they hated God for doing it. Now, we use the word rebellion as a horrible, powerful word, not fully understood. We think it means the worst possible condition a person could be in. Everybody has been created in the form of rebellion. Does that not what Moses, that's not what Apostle Paul said? Look, we are at war with God, and though we are losing, we think we are winning. That means rebellion, right? When you're at war with God, but what did God do? Killed his son to deliver a rebellious person. You, me, all mankind. So the word rebellion, we don't like it because we don't think, we have never been rebellious ever in our entire life. I always been a good kid. I never got mad at my mommy. You'll believe it, do you? Sheesh. See, I'm not that convincing, am I? Anyway, just real quick on the 15th chapter. Not going too very far on it. An interesting phrase. You know, it says Yahuwah is a man of war, and so on and so forth. And down here, verse 11, this is Micomoka. Micomoka. Who is like unto you? All right, who is like unto you among the Elohims? That's where it first was stated and written by Moses. And it's the same words that Miriam used in her singing and her dancing. She didn't write this. Moses did. And she just took it and did tambourines because of this one. And he is, his warrior is landed in the sea. And verse 12, just a quick thing here. And the people shall hear, not have heard yet, but shall hear. This is Moses talking now on this one. And be afraid. Sorrow shall be taken hold of the inhabitants of Phoenicia. Really? Were they going to go to Phoenicia? Where are they going? What's Phoenicia? The Philistines? This hit the word, verse 14. Chapter 15, verse 14.
Now that's the Philistines.
But you know what that word means? Huh? Land of sojourners. Why would it be called the land of sojourners? Because they weren't going to last very long. God's going to kick the sojourners out. As he promised Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, it didn't happen immediately, did it? But Moses knew something about God far in advance. Yes.
But aren't we sojourners too?
Are we what?
Aren't we sojourners too?
We're sojourners on the earth, but not in that land.
Okay.
And the difference between those two things. Moses, Abraham was a sojourner, but what sojourner of what? He's looking for a city that no man has ever made. So he really wasn't a sojourner looking for a city in Jerusalem. He wasn't looking for a city in Palestine. He wasn't looking for a city in Moses' time. He was waiting for and looking for that city of God. God told Abraham a tremendous amount of stuff. He told Moses a tremendous amount of stuff. We'll find out later how much he told him. And so they crossed the Red Sea and so on and so forth. Of course, the people murmured against Moses. We'll talk about this more in detail when we go over the journey to the ten, about why that water was used and why it made them sick and what was the reason for it. But verse 26 tells you, I made you sick unto death, so you would know that I will heal you. And he used something like a tree, a branch, a piece of stick. What else did God cannot use? We'll talk about that when that time comes. Any questions? This is a very interesting part of the book of Exodus. And it's going to take me a little bit longer. So I'm going to do as very much as I can to lead you up to the point of the time when they go to Mount Sinai. Because now the story, for me personally, becomes extremely fascinating. Because I know where God's taking them. Yes? Yes, but I'll go back more in detail of the chapter 13 and 14 and 15 to go into detail of what those words are, what they mean, and where God is taking them. It's very, my personal opinion, it's very important for us to see what is written and try our very best not to put something there that's not there. I know it's very tempting come up with a simple answer. Because we like to make God a logical God. We like to make God a scientific God. I mean, serious. We like to make God to make sense. Why? He is the creator. He can make our sense look like it's what it really is. Worthless. Because he doesn't think or act or respond in any which way, shape we think he should or we believe he should or supposes that he does. Suppositions are very, very strong amongst an awful lot of people who believe in God. But the supposition is that God must be like this. I couldn't see him any other way. He has to use his brain. He must be thinking dumb. Oh, he must be thinking this way. It satisfies our innermost part. But it doesn't satisfy the truth. Yes. Bill.
That's just like when he says, in everything give thanks, for this is my will for you. And you're going, but that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Why are you doing this? Well, it's for me to know and you're going to find out. In the meantime, give me thanks for it.
Hindsight is one of the greatest things God gives us. That is his hindsight. He says, see what I did? You got it? You think you got insight now? No. Keep looking. Look at the hindsight. You'll get the picture. Keep looking backward. You'll see it. You don't know what's in front of you at all. Israel didn't know what was in front of them. Did they? They didn't know why they were there for 400 years. They didn't know. They didn't have a vision. God didn't let them see. God didn't let them picture it. God didn't do it to punish anybody. He did it because I am Yahuwah. And Israel will know who I am. Egypt will know who I am. And at time, every knee shall bow before me. They will know who I am. Does that make sense to you? He is our creator. And I really am grateful that I stumble and I fall. I make stupid things. I make stupid statements. I make stupid actions. Okay? But I can't dwell upon them. If I dwell upon them, I don't dwell upon the creator of heaven and earth. And so I put it aside as fast as I possibly can. Sometimes I wish it was quicker. But it doesn't, you know, all of a sudden it's okay, I'm gonna read. I rip the Bible, I read something in the Bible. All of a sudden, whatever I thought was gone. Now it's back on him.